The following is a part of the Radio Memphis On Demand service. It originally aired live on Radio Memphis and has been edited for time.
That's Fragile Mortals for you right here on Radio Memphis. You're tuning into Radio Memphis Around the World with me, D. And if that did not get you fired up, man, you need to wake up. That is a fantastic feel-good hit for the summer, Fragile Mortals. And you know what's really cool and what's really beautiful about that? That is a song that actually was sent to me. And the reason it was sent to me is because that was a collaboration with Generation Kill and Daryl DMC McDaniels, yes, from Run DMC. And that right there is the ultimate crossover project. Well, what's even more beautiful about that, how cool is it to have a hip-hop legend that comes in and is part of that idea all in and of itself? Because, you know, he was part of the first idea of doing crossovers. And, you know, you guys know, I know everybody's been real excited because you guys know that I'm actually going to get ready to pull him in and do a conversation with him. But just so you understand, and for those of you that are just joining us here in Radio Memphis Around the World, Daryl McDaniels, also obviously finally known as DMC, is probably, you know, is probably one of the coolest dudes on the planet. And he himself made his first start in the music as one-third of the groundbreaking rap group Run DMC. And that group winds up becoming probably the most popular in terms of fans and influence. Now, being one of the founding members of this multi-platinum music group and selling over 30 million singles and albums worldwide, it's going to be very hard to pretty much overstate his influence on popular culture. Now, he helps transform rap and hip-hop into the most popular music in the world, while building a fan base that rivals the biggest acts in rock and roll. And of course, this right here is right off of the RunDMC.com sites and stuff, you know, as far as their bios, you guys want to kind of follow along. Now, as the first and greatest of hip-hop superstars, you know, you got to remember Rev Run, Jam Master Jay, along with DMC. You know, they were the first rappers to earn a gold album. They were the first to earn a platinum album. They were first to go multi-platinum. They were first to have their videos played on MTV. They were the first on American Bandstand and Saturday Night Live, and the first rap band to grace the cover of Rolling Stone and Spin. First. Did you catch all of that? Because I sure did. Now, in addition to being a trailblazer in the music business, DMC has released his own musical projects that was entitled Checks, Thugs, and Rock and Roll, where he talks about his discovery that he was adopted, his alcoholism, his deep depressions, his suicidal thoughts, and, you know, he wound up making it into something very, very fantastic and being able to give back into his community because he's just that type of a beautiful person. McDaniels, he's the co-founder of the Felix Organization, which is a nonprofit that's actually focused on providing inspiring opportunities, new experiences, and things like that to enrich lives of children who are growing up in foster care systems. 2009, he and Running DMC actually was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He has published an autobiography that was entitled King of Rock, and there's a thing behind that, and we're definitely going to talk to him about that. Respect, Responsibility, and My Life with Run DMC, as well as a memoir entitled 10 Ways Not to Commit Suicide. Now, McDaniels, he just keeps going. He created the comic book publishing imprint Daryl Makes Comics. And in 2014 and in 2016, Run DMC became the first rap group to be awarded the Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award. All right, now I can continue on, but I know you guys are dying to hear from him. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring Mr. Daryl DMC McDaniels online with me right now, also fondly known as D. How are you doing, baby?
Hey, how you doing? What's up, D?
Oh, man, D to D. I'm going to tell you, as we were talking before we got on air, we decided that this particular episode of Radio Memphis Around the World is going to be called D Squared. Because the two
D Squared in hell.
D Squared is going to sit down and we're going to have a conversation. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm good. Just chilling at home on a Saturday, which is good because usually I'm on the road. I got a Comic Con or a performance to do almost every week.
Yes.
So I was like, I don't got nothing to do this weekend. I could just sit in home and go to 7-Eleven and chill out. So,
and you're like, wait a minute.
And I got the opportunity to talk to you, D.
See, that's what I'm talking about. This was meant to happen. It's destiny. It was meant to happen. And I am so thrilled for that. And those of you that are tuned in, I'm talking to DMC. You know, there is so much with you I don't even know where to start. But let me just let me just tell you what kind of impact that you're making by being on this station with us here at Radio Memphis. You know, we're out of Memphis. You know, we're an unsigned and indie station. Obviously, we play we play a ton of really, really cool music. You're in the middle of Around the World, which is all genres and stuff. And you know,
one of the
biggest key things, you know, for me to be able to have a conversation with you is that not only do we have a ton of fans that love the music that we play, but we have a ton of artists, we have a ton of musicians and entertainers that also tune in because they tune in for food for thought and they tune in for inspiration. And you're the epitome of what it took to actually take those risks, you know, make things happen and do it because you just wanted to see what was going to happen on the other side.
And, right.
And, you know, and more than anything, you know, of course, you'll learn about me, D, that I have to stalk. And of course, there's plenty of stuff out there on you, by the way, just so you know. I read it all. And you know, the beautiful thing is that I got to spend some time and I got to learn about you and I got to learn about, you know, you as a in your childhood. And what people may not realize is that you were kind of shy and you were kind of behind the walls and you were almost scared of your abilities, you know, to be an artist and your abilities to DJ and, you know, and to do rap.
Right.
You know, and how was that for you?
It was, growing up, I went to Catholic school my whole life.
Okay.
So, you know, I was one of those kids that had to be in the house when the street light came on. One of those, like, when you see that street light come on, you have your ass in this house. So, of course, if you're in the house all the time, you got to be creative and you got to find ways to entertain yourself. But my favorite thing to do was to read comic books.
I see.
I would just read comic books and, you know, when I done read the comic book about 50 times, the only other option was to try to draw what was in the comic book.
Okay.
And that's all that I did as a kid, but I didn't know at the time that comic books were setting me up to be ready and to be prepared for this music business, entertainment stuff. And what I mean by that, comic books did two things for me.
Okay.
The fact that I was reading every day made me an excellent student.
I see.
And that was something even the educators back then overlooked. They was, you know, pulling their hair out and screaming, don't let the kids read comic books. The kids need to read the textbooks and workbooks.
Right.
They overlooked the fact that I was reading every day made me an excellent student. So
I see.
I was a straight A student, 5 and 6 stars on the forehead, always on the honor roll.
Oh, look at you.
But also reading those comic books every day, the stories, the imagination, the art, the creativity, it gave me a skill that I didn't know I even had until hip-hop came over the bridge in the late 70s, and I was like, oh, wow, you can tell stories over music?
No, and I did it.
When I first started writing my raps, it was just to write rhymes for me to hear. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't for anybody. It wasn't for my friends to hear, my mother to hear, my brother. It was my personal playtime, my personal world. And the same thing with DJ. And I heard Grandmaster Flash, and I was wondering, how was he doing all these incredible mixes? So, make a long story short, me and my brother, when everybody in the neighborhood started getting turntables, me and my brother, we had a little problem.
Okay.
Because we didn't sell weed. We didn't sell weed, so we had no money. Everybody that was selling weed had money to get things.
Honest ones. Okay.
Yeah, so we had this huge comic book collection.
Okay.
So we did a comic book sale just to get 2 turntables in the mix.
You gave up your comics?
Yeah.
Oh.
But fortunately, it turned out right. So
okay.
We had the 2 turntables and a mix. We was doing a DJ thing. When I heard Grandmaster Flash and the Furious 5, they had this record called Super Rapping.
Oh, nice.
This record called Super. This was like right after Rappers Delight came out.
Okay.
I heard Super Rapping, and that was the thing that made me start writing rhymes. So all my rhymes were just for me talking about who I am and the world that I am. And, you know, the world that I live in and things that I like to do.
Well, sure.
Because you got to understand, I was this little Catholic school kid, straight A student. I was nerdy. I was geeky. I wore glasses.
Really?
And, yeah.
You were that guy?
I was that guy.
But
me practicing in my basement writing these stories, developing characters, the linguistics, the wordplay, the creativity, the imagination, the construction,
wow,
and the assembling of all of these lines of words and sentences, ideas and concepts.
Okay.
It was just fun to me.
Okay.
What had happened was my friend Joseph Simmons,
yes,
who went to the same Catholic school as that I went to, but he was always in the other class. I didn't know him. We just knew each other from going to the same school.
I got you.
It was high and by every day, high and by, high and by.
Right.
One particular day, he came over my house to play basketball, and I let him in the house, and he saw me and my brother's turntables. He saw my huge comic book collection.
Oh, wow.
And he picked up my school books while I was writing my personal raps. And that's when he discovered, yo, Daryl, you writing all these raps?
Oh, wow.
You writing stuff like this? And I was like, yeah. He looked at me. This was in the beginning of ninth grade. He looked at me and he said, whenever my brother Russell lets me make a record, I'm putting you in my group. But that didn't make no sense to me, because it was like, when he said that to me, it was like a foreign language. I was like, what? You know, I didn't say this to him. I just looked at him. What the hell are you talking about?
Right.
Run, Joseph Simmons and Jason Mazzell, they went to the same high school.
Okay.
I went to a completely different high school. But ninth grade, 10th grade, 11th grade, 12th grade, I graduated from Rice High School. I got accepted to St. John's University, so right, I wrote a rhyme about it.
Okay.
I'm DMC, and the place to be, I'm going to St. John's University. And since kindergarten, and I acquired the knowledge, after 12th grade, I went straight to college. And I wrote that whole rhyme. That was in June.
Wow.
In August of 1982, the phone rings, and it was Joseph Simmons, and he basically said, yo, remember 4 years ago? When I said, whenever my brother lets me make the record, I was like, yeah. He was like, grab your school books. We're going to the studio to make the record. And we went to the studio, and we made It's Like That. And Sucker MC's, the first Run DMC single.
That is crazy.
That's how it went down.
That is absolutely crazy. And you know what's funny, you know, and for those of you that are tuned in, I'm talking to Daryl McDaniel, DMC, also known as D, because D and D are sitting down and talking. You know, what's That's funny about D. that, D squared, baby. What's funny about all of that, though, is that you had no clue whatsoever the impact that you three were getting ready to make.
Exactly, right. Run had a little bit idea, because prior to that, before Rapper's Delight was made, there was hip-hop going on big time in New York City.
Mm.
It had moved off the streets, it had moved out of the park, and it had moved into the clubs. So Russell Simmons was one of many promoters.
I see.
And Russell actually was managing this rapper named Curtis Blow.
Imagine that.
At the time. So when Run was 12 years old, he would do, in the summertime only, because during the fall and winter and spring, we was in school. But in the summertime, Run would go on stage with Curtis Blow at 12 years old. And Run was Curtis Blow's disco son. And Kurt would say, ladies and gentlemen, right about now, I'm going to bring out my disco son, DJ Run. He's going to come out here and put, it was the cutest thing ever. And Run would go out there and say his little rhyme or whatever. So Run was in that life. What happened with Run, he was originally going to be a solo artist.
Okay.
And he discovered that this dude, Daryl McDaniels, had some of the best lyrics and writing skills in the world.
See?
So that's why he put me in the group. He saw that I had something. And when I go around the high schools and middle schools, and I speak to kids.
Right.
I say, do not be ashamed
there it is.
Of your little gift that seems weird. I don't care if you can tap dance, if you play the violin, if you play the piano, you know what I'm saying, if you like poetry.
Right.
Even if you're a dude and you like ballet, that is your deliverance. That
there
is
it
your
is.
Superpower. That, you know what I'm saying?
That's
so I didn't think I was going to utilize that thing for any success in life.
Well, sure.
It was just something that I like to do. You know, I'd have been a doctor, I'd have been a teacher, I'd have been a UPS man. I would have been coming home, writing my little raps, reading my comic books, and pretending to be a DJ or MC.
Well,
you
sure.
know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And that was the beauty of it. But I had no idea that, okay, we're going to make this record. And you got to understand, here's what's real funny. When we made the first single, It's Like That and Sucker MC's, It's Like That was the A side, Sucker MC's was the B side. And remember, there was no MTV, there was no videos, and there was no album covers yet.
No, there was not.
Everything in hip-hop at the time was singles. So even for me, making this record with Run was safe to me. And what I mean by that was, when my first single came out, I was actually in rooms with people. I was up at St. John's University, and my record would play, but nobody in the room would know that I was the secret MC standing amongst them.
Was that okay with you, though? I mean, did that make you feel good knowing that you had this secret identity?
Yeah, I could hide.
Ah.
My thought, because I'm a shy kid.
I had it,
you know what I'm saying? Now,
okay.
In my secret world, everything was fine. I had to discover ways to not be detected in this universe. And that was all fine.
I love it.
This is funny. That was all fine until this. I didn't know that when you got a hit record and people like it, you got to get on stage and perform it for people.
That's when the problem came in. Okay.
I never wanted to perform for you. I never wanted to be on TV. I never wanted to, to speak in front of you. I wanted to say my little rhymes, put it out there, and move on to my next journey in life. So when it was time to go on stage, again, my comic books helped me because I was in the DC comics, Batman, Superman, Flash, and all of that. But Gotham and Metropolis in the comic books was fictional.
Mm-hmm.
Marvel, on the other hand,
Stan Lee
was brilliant because he had the superheroes running around New York. So every time I opened up a Marvel comic
you could identify.
Right, it was real to me. But here's something that's really deep, and I always tell kids this. Marvel taught me in life, you define yourself with an adjective and you tell the world who you are. For example, the Amazing Spider-Man.
Yes.
The Incredible Hulk.
Yes.
So now I got to get up on stage with Run for Real in front of some real people.
Oh.
Here's where the comic books helped me.
Oh.
I was pretending that mild-mannered Catholic school kid Daryl McDaniels transformed on stage into the Mighty King of Rock.
Yes. Okay. There it is. The Mighty King of Rock.
Yep.
And what was so funny, and just so you know, yep. I was having a conversation with another person that you were actually in the middle of doing some collaborations with, Mr. Rob Machete. We were talking about you the other night because we're 70s and 80s kids too, you made real huge impacts on us when all of this stuff was coming out. And what was so funny was that we talk about rap and we talk about hip hop and stuff, and of course, Rob busts in and he was like, now remember, he was the king of rock. And I was like, I know, right?
The king of rap. I didn't want to be the king of rap.
You wanted
the
to
reason
be
why,
go
the
ahead.
The reason why I wanted to be the king of rock is because of this. When I was a kid, radio was beautiful here in New York.
Yeah.
They had this station, 77 WABC. And one of the jocks' name was Dan Ingram. You want to laugh?
Yeah.
It wasn't until about 3 years ago that I discovered that was saying Dan Ingram, because he would have the girls and they would sing it. I always thought it was like a musical instrument. So as a kid growing up, listening to the station, I was always hearing Dan Ingram. I had no idea that it was saying Dan Ingram.
But here's
what the beauty about it. Those stations, they played the Jackson 5. They played Sly and the Family Stone. They played James Brown.
Yep.
But I cared nothing about soul music. For some reason, in the 70s, folk rock and rock, Led Zeppelin, Janis Joplin, Procol Harum, Elton John.
Look at you. Crosby,
Stills, Young and Nash, the Doobie Brothers.
Dude, I'm so falling in love with you again.
Neil,
what the hell?
Young, the folk people like Joni Mitchell, Jim Croce, Bob Dylan. That's the music that I loved as a little kid.
That's fantastic.
That's like when I would hear James Brown, I paid no attention to it. When I would hear Marvin Gaye and Al Green and all those guys, I would pay no attention to it.
Right.
But when a John Fogerty record came on, oh my God, what's this?
That is crazy.
When the Stones, oh my God, when the Rolling Stones would come on and the Beatles would come on, it would grab my attention. And the whole connection is when hip hop started here in New York City.
Right.
A lot of the records that was playing, or a lot of the rock records with the dope beats and the loud guitars and the great choruses were some of the same records the hip-hop DJs was playing for the rappers to rap over, like Billy Squire's Big Beat. Like Aerosmith's Walk This Way.
That was
like
insane.
Like Queen, and so on and so forth.
Right.
So that affiliation made me say, I don't want to be the king of these rappers. I am much, and you got to understand, the funny joke is, I was just pretending. I was like, these rappers are so inferior to my superior skills. I am the hardest entity in this hip-hop universe. So I shall become the mighty king of rock. Because I'm on another level.
Man, I got a super cape on.
It was my love of rock music that influenced me to perform the way I did when it came to hip hop.
You know,
I didn't want to be a rapper. I wanted to rock like I wanted to be outstanding like Freddie Mercury.
Oh, wow.
I wanted to rule that stage and walk that stage like Mick Jagger. You know what I'm saying? I wanted to twist and gyrate and jump up and down like you know, Freddie Mercury. So my whole thing was, yo, these guys are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wanted to proudly wear my glasses like Elton John did.
Yes.
That's why I talked about my glasses. I grew up in suburban, lower middle class Queens, New York.
Okay.
So, and I went to Catholic school, so I didn't sell drugs. I wasn't in a street gang. I never went to jail.
Right.
So rock and roll and folk rock taught me to not be ashamed to talk about my life.
Well, you know,
I ate chicken and collard greens, and this, you know, I'm not going to front to y'all and say I'm this gangster guy and I got guns. I had none of that.
No, you didn't, and you made it. You know, and for those of you that are tuned in, I'm talking to Daryl DMC McDaniels, D talking to D. You know, one of the
D
beautiful
talking D.
D talking to D, D squared, baby, man. We're gonna make this into something when this is done. When you know, when you guys were really, really kind of getting into it, and I think it's just absolutely beautiful that you had no intention of being this rock star,
right.
None whatsoever. But you know, one of the things that you guys did, you know, when you, especially when you did the stuff with Aerosmith and you did the Walk This Way thing.
Yep.
Remember that, and you just described your world, but remember, it's like, if you were a rap person, then you had to be that. If you were a rock person, you were that. If you were pop, you were that. You know,
it was separate.
It was like The Breakfast Club, that morning in detention, the movie The Breakfast Club, where everybody's like, okay, you're in your own world, and it's not cool to swap spit, and it's not cool to hold each other's hands. And, you know, you guys come out, and you come blazing, you know, the video comes out and everything, and it was like, oh my God. They can be friends, and you know, it goes together. And one of the things that you did for rap and hip hop is that you based it on music, people playing instruments, people actually creating something. You know,
right? It was all about the music, because you got to think about it like this. When we started, we utilized all the music that these great musicians were creating.
Yes.
All we did was tell our own stories on them. But the reason why it was able to work so well, you know, we was from a generation, late 60s, early 70s, late 70s. The beautiful thing about music was it was an experience. It was a multi-sensory experience.
Yes.
We could listen to the music, but we also could pick up the album covers and read them and look at them.
Yep.
And at the same time, we also learned something about responsibility from these rock stars, especially me.
Okay.
When you look at Fogerty, when you look at John Lennon, when you look at Bob Dylan, even though they were the so-called celebrity rock stars, they always made records about the people in the audience, what the everyday people was going or what was going on in society, and what was going on in the nation. When Neil Young made the record about Ohio, the Kent University shooting, we saw that, wow, these guys are being a mouthpiece for the people in the audience. So those kind of responsibilities is the thing that allowed hip-hop, not the hip-hop of the day that is illiterate, stupid, disrespectful,
there it is,
homophobic, dissing women, not that hip-hop.
Nope.
Every time we made a song, we could make a song that was about having fun, but the very next record would be something that would be relatable to white, black, Puerto Rican, big, small, short, you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
It was the universe of music, and that all came from, we saw what rock and roll was doing.
Yes.
But it wasn't until we did the demonstration of these rock kids, this rock group, and this rap group getting together
yes.
to put those elements together at the same time for people to see that. To this day, people say, yo, when Steven Tyler takes that mic stand and knocks that wall down in that video, deep, that didn't just happen in the world. That happened, I mean, that didn't just happen in a video. It happened in the world.
It did.
But it was
it
all
did.
Because of the music.
It was
all because of the music that
now,
it worked.
Now, so you guys, who came up with the idea to do it with Aerosmith and do it with Steven Tyler? Who came up with that?
Well, all right, the story goes like this. The idea to do the exact record the way the band did it was Rick Rubin's idea.
I see.
But it was me and Jam Master Jay's idea to do a remake of it.
Okay.
But Rick Rubin was brilliant. He said originally, Walk This Way, we was going to sample it. We was going to steal Aerosmith's music. and me and Run was going to talk about how good we were.
Ah.
Originally, it was going to be that music. That drum pattern.
Yep.
That bass line and everything. But originally, the lyrics went like this. We came out in 83. It was 1986. We was about to drop this Raising Hell album. So my rap was going to open like this. I'm DMC in the place to be. Been rhyming on a mic since 83. I'm the best MC in history. There will never be an MC better than me. That's why they call me the K-I-N-G. Shoot a jump shot, I'll grab the re. Then you see me dunk the ball, that's what you'll see. And then Run was supposed to come on and go, I'm DJ Run and I'm number one. I'm here to get it done and have some fun. When Rick walked into the studio, he was like, hey, guys. Do you know what this is? Now, me and Run didn't know the record was called Walk This Way.
Okay.
All we knew was to tell Jay, because we just knew about the album cover.
Ah.
So get the album with the toys on it and play number four. That's all me and Run knew.
I love
the album
it.
With the toys on it, play number four.
But you knew it by that. But you knew it
but
by
it was
that.
Rick. Yeah, Rick Rubin comes in. He says, no, the name of the group is Aerosmith. The name of the song is Walk This Way. And he gives us the 411 on Aerosmith.
Okay.
He tells us who they are, how long they've been around, this and that. You know, right now, you know, they was once one of the greatest rock groups in the world right now. Right now, you know, it's down, you know, they're down in the, you know, they're down in the dumps of their career or whatever.
And that, says, yes, yes.
It would be amazing if you did the record over. So me and Run was thinking from our limited hip-hop perspective. We said, yo, Rick, what do you think we're going to do? We're going to sample it, and we're going to rhyme on it. Rick said, no. Learn the verses. Learn the song the way the band originally did it. Now, Jay, rest in peace, Jay was like, yo, that might be incredible. But me and Run was totally against that.
You guys were like, I don't want to.
Yeah, and the reason why was, Walk This Way, it's a tongue twister. Walk This Way isn't the first rock rap record. Remember, the first rock rap record was Rock Box.
Yeah.
Our first album, which was the first video on MTV. That was 84. Then in 85, we did a video about me and Run going into an imaginary Rock and Roll Hall of Fame that didn't even exist yet with Larry Bud Melman at the front door as a security guard going, hey, you guys can't come in here. This is a rock and roll museum.
So me and Run wanted to
continue on that pattern.
Okay.
Sample a great rock riff, create a great rock song, and then me and Run going to rhyme on it. But Rick said, no, let's do the record over. And the reason why it really worked was not only did Rick get us to do the record over as the band did it, he went and got the band to do it with us.
That was insane. You know, and what was so funny about all of that is that when that happened, you know, not only did it, I mean, that right there, you guys were, you know, kind of stirring in the undergrounds, and you guys were stirring, you know, as far as, you know, as the up and coming, and, you know, and here's Aerosmith, you know, and they're kind of on the tail end of what they had going on at that time. And you guys wound up giving a shot into each other's arm, and it catapulted both of you.
I know, it was crazy. We had no, you know, we look for Aerosmith, it was, what do we got to lose? And for us, it was like, okay, let's take a chance. We had no idea that what, you know what, it changed. The people said it changed. It made history.
It did. Are you kidding? Look, all right, and you know, this is coming from an individual, you know, that grew up during that time period. And you know, brother, I'm sitting there watching TV, right? And you know, and you see this. Look, as a consumer, as a fan, and as somebody that is just watching and having it wash over you and getting roped in and ultimately, you know, just, you know, crazy over it. You see it come on, and you're like, Oh my God! And you know, it's never.
What the hell
you just happened?
How many people told us that? Everybody say, "Yo, we were sitting there channel surfing and watching MTV, and here comes." Now, the funny joke was, everybody that knew Aerosmith was like, "What the hell is Aerosmith doing with these Run DMC dudes?" But our fans, you know, they really didn't know. They knew the music, but they didn't know the identity. So when our fans saw it, they was like, "What in the hell is Run DMC doing with the Rolling Stones? What's going on?" Because they didn't know. You know what I'm saying? They was like, "What the hell is
they doing
didn't
with
know.
The
Rolling Stones?" Then as the record grew, everybody started, you know, Kid Rock said Run DMC and Aerosmith had a baby and I popped out.
Yes.
And everybody from Korn to Limp Bizkit,
yes,
to Blink 182, all of those dudes said they were made. Tim Armstrong, who Tim Armstrong from Rancid, big shout out to him. I'm working with him right now on some music.
Okay.
He said, "Man, you dudes didn't just make a record that was great." He said, "Y'all did something to the universe that was great."
You
I was
did.
Like, "We did?"
And see, but that's the thing, is that the whole concept was never the intention that you were going to change the course of music and change the course of time.
It was just to do it to have fun.
It was, and there, bam, bam.
And then, hold up. Then we took it a step further by touring the world with the Beastie Boys.
And okay, so all right, that right
there—that's
a
whole another level.
That
you know
right
what I'm
there.
Saying? We took from '86 to like '88 to the beginning of '89. Run DMC and Beastie Boys. We went around the world.
Yes.
They first started with us on the Raisin Hell tour, and it was the Beastie Boys, LL Cool J, Houdini, and Run DMC. And once that marriage happened, that was even phenomenal, because now we going into the big venues and, you know, the promoters in each city was like, "There's no way these white punk rock kids is going to get with these black hip hop kids."
Everybody's misunderstood.
No,
everybody's
every
in the wrong
night,
place.
It was amazing.
That is crazy, you know. And so here you are, D, Mr. Shy. I'm gonna hide behind my comic books. I'm gonna hide behind my super cape, and I'm gonna hide behind my glasses. And now,
exactly,
you have just been launched and catapulted into the universe in front of the world. And not only did that happen for all of you, you know, for Run DMC, you guys wind up, you know, becoming the poster childs, you know, for what was ultimately going to make sure that hip hop and rock and everybody made a marriage. You know, that impact, you know, what did that do to you? What did that do to you as a person when you
It's overwhelming.
That?
It See? Is completely overwhelming. But I would say in the first, from 83 to 86, it was easy. It became overwhelming once people saw what we had done. You know, the powers that be, you know, the business of the music business, the management.
Sure.
The focus of some of your fellow band members. It changes. Before, we were just going in and making music and having fun. After 86, it became, you need to make this music for a reason.
Oh.
Like, you need to have a hit record.
Oh.
You need to have a song. You need to be on the radio. You need to chart. You need to make money. And once those needs became the
priority,
the dominant destination,
right,
or the results you was looking for, that's when all the pressure and the stress come on. So what personally happened to me, where once my only strength and necessity in life was to just get up and create, now I got to create this need to create, which I really don't want to do. So I'm going to just follow the leads of my two friends. But by doing that, you kill yourself.
You do.
So basically, I left Daryl McDaniels. I left my love for comic books, reading and writing and telling fun stories and saying nice things to, let me follow the lead of these people so I can satisfy them. And when you do that, you're not being true to yourself. So where comic books was my power and imagination, I had to substitute that with Jack Daniels and Jim Beam. That's when all the problems began, from like 87 all the way up to probably like 93, because eventually all of those emotions, all of those thoughts, all of those feelings that you're holding in,
right,
eventually it is going to blow up like the atom bomb, and mm-hmm. it did, and it threw me into this big spiral of depression.
And it did.
And that depression led me to alcoholism. The alcoholism led me to where Chris Cornell in Chester just went. I was there. I was there. And the only thing that saved me is when I said to myself, let me go get sober. But this is the saving grace. I went to rehab just to stop drinking.
Okay.
But when I got in rehab, I discovered this thing called therapy.
Mm.
And it was therapy that was the most gangster, the most powerful thing ever that made me realize who I am is perfect.
Yes.
And if I respect and I cherish and I focus on making sure that Daryl is all right, everything else will fall into place. I don't care who you are, a musician, a businessman,
right,
a bus driver, a cook. If you're not right with yourself, your feelings, your emotions, and your truth, all of your relationships, your business relationships, your occupations, your career, even your family and your romantic relationships will fall to the wayside. So in therapy, I discovered that therapy does this, and this is to everybody out there going through something.
Okay.
Don't never get it twisted. The therapist doesn't help you. The therapist is just a decoy.
Mm.
So you could do two things. You could repeat stuff to yourself that you said to yourself at certain instances in your life and you didn't listen, or you could start saying stuff that you never said to yourself that is really the best advice, and it's gotta come from you. Everybody
yeah.
else is just an example. You know,
yeah.
it's like if you touch the stove, you get burnt. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So some of us want to touch the stove and see how low we could get burnt. So you learn from everything. But it wasn't until that I went to therapy where I could have Daryl start talking to Daryl.
Wow.
And I realized, my therapist told me, D, you had the power in 1986 not to fall down that deep hole of depression. I was diagnosed with suppressed emotion.
Mm.
And I was like, what the hell is that?
Right, what
and
the hell is that?
Everything you were feeling, you was holding in because you wanted to be a team player.
I
you
see.
Want everybody to say D's easy to get along with.
Right.
You want everybody to like you. And he said, D, when you wasn't holding your emotions in and you was pouring all of that out on them records and in every interview, beautiful things in the world was happening.
Right.
And right then and there, my jaw just dropped to the ground. When I change, I just want to get up. Let's make a record and talk about lollipops.
Now, why not?
Let's make a record about lollipops. Why not? Who cares? He said, never, ever, 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 ever in life worry about what anybody else thinks of you.
Hmm.
And once I said that, I realized I didn't need to be hanging with Jack Daniels and Jim Beam anymore.
Right. They were really not your best friends. And you know,
At all. And truth be told, you know, I'm not a weed guy. Because weed is funny. Weed makes you think too much.
Oh, my God.
I learned from watching Run, he don't smoke no more, but Run and Jay smoke more weed than God should grow on this beautiful earth. And they would always lose stuff. They would lose their house keys. They would always forget stuff. You know
they didn't know where they were.
Me, I liked it, the alcohol, because at the time I'm taking the alcohol, it made me feel like the Hulk.
Ah.
I feel invincible.
Yes.
But when it wears off, every time it wore off, I felt worse than I did before. So that's what made me realize, yo, I need to get sober. But when I went to get sober, you know, I went to get sober. But then I discovered therapy. And therapy was just D talking to D.
I see.
And D had to listen to D because D was telling him, forget this person, forget that person. If they want to do that, more power to them. Let them do it. You get up and walk away. And my therapist said, yeah, you know, I told my therapist, yeah, but you know, a lot of times when you're in these situations and you're doing something creative or in your job or, you know, whatever it is that you're doing, if you're a cook at a restaurant or this and that,
right,
and you know you don't like the surroundings and the situations, the attitudes of the people, but you stay there just to get the check.
That's it.
He said, D, all you got to do is just tell these people when they say, yo, D, you're going to walk away from all this money? You look at him, you say, you're goddamn right, I'm going home to read my comic books and write some songs about some puppies.
There it is.
And he says, once you go home and do that, he said, you might have just walked away from $100 million. But once you go home and do that, you might discover $100 billion.
And
it's really you doing what you're supposed to do. So you know, I went through that and when I wrote my book, 10 Ways Not to Commit Suicide,
right.
I'm not writing a book as Daryl McDaniels, this special person and this and that.
No.
I'm no different from the teacher. I'm no different from the doctor. I'm no different from the plumber, because all of our situations of shame are the same. It's just that in all of our situations, and I don't mean for this to rhyme, if you remove the guilt and shame, you remove the pain. And if you reveal how you really feel, whether good or bad, then and only then you can heal. And that's what I started doing.
That needs to be in a song. You know that, right? That whole line.
I know.
That's okay. I got it. I got this. I'm going to give you a copy of this interview. I got the whole thing, man. That's your next song. You know that.
Yep. And it's funny that you said it. Now, going back to that, I think my appeal to rock music when I was growing up, you know, when I would hear John Fogerty's Looking Out the Back Door, when I heard Neil Young's record, you know, when I heard Bob Dylan, it was so descriptive.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? They had their records about sex, drugs, and rock and roll and all that. But they always had a record, you know, in that era of those great rock and folk guys about the Vietnam War. They
right.
wasn't afraid to say something about it.
Right.
That touched a lot of people, women's rights and social rights and civil rights. Even Marvin Gaye, Mr. Sex Love Man, did a record called What's Going On.
He did.
So they knew the importance of having that gift. And I looked at myself. I'm not doing records because I need money and want money. And I'm not doing records because I need to be on the radio and need to be on MTV. I got on the radio and got money because I was just making records.
That's
that
it.
I like to make. You know what I'm saying? And once I realized that it's what you do that determines what will be done. Now, and here's a good example. Once we had that big success in 86, and I talk about this in my book.
Yes.
Instead of just being Run DMC, we tried to be Run DMC, and that's when our careers went to shit.
Ah, big statement.
We tried to duplicate the success of Walk This Way. We tried to duplicate the success of King of Rock and this and that. And me, I sat back and held all my creative ideas, everything that's exploding with what I'm doing with Rob Dukes and Rob Machete with Fragile Mortal.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that's exploding with, I got a record coming out with Sammy Hagar. I got a record coming out with Joan Jett.
I got a
record coming out with Tim Armstrong from Rancid.
Mm-hmm.
I got a record coming out with Grandmaster Cass from the Cold Crush 4.
Yep.
I got a record coming out with Chuck D of Public Enemy. When I sat back and held in what I wanted to do, I wasn't including that after 1980, after Raising Hell, Run and Jay kind of took the reins because they were looking at the prize. Yo, if we do this again, we get more radio play and we get more money and we get more time on MTV. And I just, you know, I was okay. I respect these dudes. Run put me in a group, so I'm going to follow their lead. By me doing that is what destroyed me.
That's the biggest thing.
I could have said, yo, I love y'all. It's good to go. Like, my joke is, I wish we would have did what Eric Clapton and them did when they just made three albums and they called it a day. Not Queen. What's the other the group? Eric Clapton's group. What's the record? I can't think of the group.
Cream.
I'm talking about Cream.
Cream. Yeah, I always get because Queen is one of my favorite groups. Cream. Like we should have did that. Or you know, you get to the point where, like when the Beatles did. We can't possibly do any more Beatles stuff. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
We should have known that. But what happened was we kind of built this whole industry and this and that. You know, we on the radio. Because remember, when we came out, hip-hop wasn't on the radio 24 hours.
No, it wasn't.
It was only on Friday and Saturday night.
Yeah, because it was exclusive. It was like, yeah, okay, you guys can have this part of the, you know, the
right.
week. And it's like, and it has to be the dark time. It has to be the late time.
Yeah, the end of the week.
And when everybody else is out partying and stuff, okay, y'all can have these 3 hours because ain't nobody, you know, everybody else is out partying with rock and stuff. So here y'all go. Here you go. Here's your offering.
Once we changed that, it was like, yo, we can play these guys in the daytime and all of that. So, you know, to make a long story short, when it stopped being fun,
That's it.
And that's when everything creeped in and stuff like that.
That's it. You've done so much stuff and so many amazing things with that. One of the other things also too, coming into it, during this time that you were going through the depression and during this time that you were trying to, really kind of find your way. I did see that there was one very special song that kept your head above water.
Oh, yes, Sarah McLachlan's Angel.
Yes.
That was the only thing that made me say, if something this good is around, it's good to be. I listened to that song for one whole year.
Wow.
That's all I listened to. Because remember, I was talking about feelings.
Yes.
There was just something in the feel of that record that made me say, yo, D, it's going to be all right.
Mm.
I listened to that song for one whole year.
Yes.
And here's what's crazy. At the end of that year, my manager, Eric, took me to Clive Davis Grammy party, and I didn't want to go.
Okay.
I can't. I said, I was like, F Clive Davis, F the music business, F you. Like, I was cursing out everybody. I just want to sit here and listen to my Sarah McLachlan record. So he finally, enthusiastically gets me to go to the party. And I said, okay, I'm going to go to this party for you because you work real hard to get these tickets. You know, he came and said, yo, D, I got two tickets to Clive Davis party. So in my head, I'm thinking, damn, he done sold his soul to the devil just to go to Clive Davis' stupid-ass party. So I said, okay, since he sold his soul to the devil, let me go to the party.
Let me help him, right.
And, we was only supposed to be there for probably an hour. And Sarah McLachlan walks in the door.
Oh, how funny.
Right, and I'm like, whoa, I heard of her, but I didn't know her. I was like, that's that lady who made that record. You know what I'm saying? That changed my whole life. So, I walked over to told her what her record did, and I said, the name of the record is Angel. You sound like an angel, but you're not an angel to me. You're God. And I just went on and on.
Oh.
I listened to that record every day. I listened to that record day and night, whatever, whatever.
Oh, my
and she
goodness.
She says, thank you, Daryl, for telling me that. And she take this. She says, thank you for telling me that. Because that's what music is supposed to do.
And you needed to hear that.
And I needed to. So she shakes my hand and walks away. 3 years go by. 3 years go by. I'm, drinking. I'm depressed. I'm alcoholic. But I'm holding on because
okay.
I got the Sarah McLachlan Angel record. So here's the funny joke. Right when I was ready to give it up, I was like, I can't do this no more because I didn't know there was something else missing. I was like, okay, if I do die tomorrow, people know the DMC story. You can Wikipedia us, Google us. There's two books out on us. We had just did the Behind the Music. I said, if I do die tomorrow, people know the Run DMC, Walk This Way, My Adidas, Mr. J, DJ Run thing. But nobody knows the little boy Daryl.
So I
said,
just
in case I don't make it, I want to write a book, which was the first book, Respect, Responsibility in My Life with DMC.
Right.
I said, I know my birthday is May 31st, 1964, but I don't know no details about my birthday. So I said, let me call my mother up.
I'm
not going to say, Mom, I'm getting ready to kill myself, so I need to know some information.
Mm-hmm.
I just called up and said, yo, Mom, I know my birthday is May 31st, 1964. How much did I weigh? What time I was born? What hospital? She told me those three things, hung up the phone. An hour goes by. She calls back with my father. Now, you got to understand, at this point in my life, I'm an alcoholic, suicidal, metaphysical, spiritual wreck.
Yes.
She goes, we have to tell you something else. And I'm like, okay, what's up? You was a month old when we brought you home and you're adopted, but we love you. Bye.
What?
Yes. Oh, that's how I found out.
That's how that conversation went?
Yes, it did.
Boo, we got you home and we got you home and we were like, okay, love you. Click.
Yep. It was like that quick. You was a month old when we brought you home and you're adopted, but we love you. Bye.
Oh, my God.
It was their opportunity to get it out. So right then and there, my whole world was crashed.
Of course it was.
But then I was like, man, that's, I was like, it's effed up. Right? Well, it won't stop. Because what had happened to me was I've got depressed. I found out I was adopted. Jam Master Jay got shot and killed.
Yes.
And my father died all in the same time period.
Oh,
all in a matter of 2 years.
My goodness.
All of that. So I was gone. But I remember what Sarah McLachlan had said. So dig this. When I was a kid growing up, there was always this record on the radio that was very sad, but it just sounded so good. And it was by this guy named Harry Chapin. And it was called Cats in the Cradle.
Yes.
And it would always come on the radio.
It was always so real. And it was always, you know, it took you to...
Different from all the songs on the radio. Yeah, because it was a real...
Yeah.
I was born just the other day. Came into the world in the usual way. But it was bills to pay. And planes to catch and bills to pay. So it was just something about that record. Yeah. It was so real. It was so different from all other rock records. So I get this idea. That was my favorite record growing up. So I'm going to take that beat, because, you know, I'm a rap guy.
Of course.
I'm
going
to take that beat, and I'm going to say these rhymes about how thankful I am, even though I'm adopted, for my mother and father that adopted me, because my life turned out good. But then I get this idea. Oh, my God. I'm going to get that lady whose record 3 years earlier made me feel the way I want to make some people feel. So I told my manager, Eric, get Sarah McLachlan on the phone. So he don't know what's going on. He's like, what the hell is going on? I said, don't worry, Emma Effa, just get her on the phone.
Right.
So make a long story short, he gets on the phone, and I say, Miss McLachlan, remember when I met you 3 years ago? And she said, she's funny. She said, yes. How can I forget you? You called me God, and I love her. So I said, if you thought I was crazy then, you're going to really think I'm crazy now, because I just found out that I was adopted, and I want to make a record that's going to talk to people and make them feel the same way your record made me feel in my worst time. So she goes, cool, I'll do it. And I was like, what?
That's it?
That was easy. Then I go, all right, because she lives in Vancouver. I said, we'll bring it to New York, this and that. Boom, bang. She says, no. You could come to my studio in Canada and make the record.
Oh,
make a long story short, we fly to Canada. We finish the record in 2 days. Now, dig this. Remember, I hear the record, right?
Mm-hmm.
I listen to it for one whole year.
Mm-hmm.
I go to a party I didn't want to go to.
Yes.
I get to meet her.
Yes.
She says that was music is supposed to do.
Yes.
She leaves. 3 years go by. I find out that I'm adopted. Now I'm back with her making a record.
Yes.
Before the session ended, when we was leaving, at the end of the session, she says, Darryl, before you go, I got to tell you something. And I go, what? She says, I was adopted too. I did not know that.
Are you serious?
Yeah. And everybody with me got the chills.
Oh.
So that's when I realized it was just something in the mood. That's when I realized the importance of what I was doing. Me, what I was doing in my whole career, like the same way drug dealers rhyme on hip hop records about, you know, I sell drugs and I got guns and I'm disrespecting women. With that same attitude, I came along and made it cool to go to school. I'm DMC and the place to be. I go to St. John. With that same attitude, you know, when I was coming up in the 60s and early 70s, you would only wear your glasses when you was in the classroom.
Yes.
When it was time to leave school, you take them out, because my whole life was, hey, binoculars. Hey, spectacles. Hey, for us.
Yeah.
But when I rap, I'm D's for doing it all of the time. M's for the rhymes that are mine.
Yep.
D's for cool as can be. Why you wear those glasses? So I can see. I didn't wear my glasses to be cool or look good. I wore them because if I don't wear them, I can't see nothing.
Yeah, I can't see anything.
So I realized the power in the truth.
You realize?
Of not being ashamed of who you are.
Yes.
And my extra advantage was the dynamic sounds of rock drums and rock guitar made people realize, oh, this nerdy, geeky guy right here is a badass motherfucker.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Hell yeah. And, so, and you, and that guy became a superhero.
You know, it all fell into place when I realized, you know, Neil Young wasn't afraid to write the record Ohio. Bob Dylan wasn't afraid to write the songs he did. John Lennon wasn't afraid to write the songs that he did. You know what I'm saying? Fogerty wasn't afraid to write Unfortunate Son. And I realized in the midst of us having our rock and roll fun, there's a responsibility there. And I feel that as long as I stick to what inspired me at 12 years old,
yes,
I will be undefeatable. And that's what I went back to. That's why I'm able to collaborate with Fragile Mortals and Rob Duke Band Generation Kill. That's why I'm able to I'm on Sammy Hager's Rock and Roll Road Trip show. I got to meet Sammy at South by Southwest this past year, and it was my first time in South by Southwest, and Sammy was like, yo, DMC, come on my show, let's do the show. I sat down with Sammy, and he, you know, I just talked to him about, you know, sampling and growing up and listening to rock radio, and then he get up on stage, and me and Sammy, we do an improvised version of his song with Montrose, Rock Candy.
Isn't that fun? Oh, Rock Candy, good. Yes. I love me some Montrose, yes.
Yeah, we get up on stage and we do an improvised version of Rock Candy. And at the end of the shoot for the show, Sandy was like, yo, we going to go in the studio. So me and Sammy went in the studio and made a brand new rock and roll hard-hitting classic that y'all will be hearing in a couple of months. But that's when it happens spontaneously. And I relate stuff like that to the beautiful things happen when it's not the label, it's not the management. The beautiful thing happens when Eric Clapton would run into B.B. King.
Yep.
And Clapton would say, hey, B.B., how you doing? What you doing this week? And B.B. would go, yo, I'm playing the pub down the corner.
There it is.
And Eric Clapton would go, okay, I'm going to go home and get my guitar. Me too.
See?
Kid. You know what I'm saying? Eric Clapton ran home, got his guitar so he could run down to the pub. Not to the Coliseum, not to the stadium. But I'm going, remember when you was a little kid, you would tell your friend, okay, I'll be right back.
I'll be right back.
Home and get my,
right.
Go home and get your coloring book or your comic book or your Bobby doll or your G.I. Joe or your AFX car.
Yep.
That's when the beauty happened.
Yep.
And that's all that we did when, you know, when we got with Aerosmith. They came as who they were. We came as who we were. We played together.
That's the way it was supposed to be.
With the Beastie Boys. And that's when the beauty, it never works when they say, hey, let's get the number one rapper together with the number one pop star and make a record.
No, it was.
But the people know. Y'all just did that because. But when you don't do it because, that's when it's most successful.
Exactly. And you know, the beautiful thing, and then for those of you that are tuned in, I've been talking to Daryl DMC McDaniels, D talking to D.
D squared, baby.
You brought up a very, very valid thing. And you know, this was the ability for, you know, a community, you know, and friends and everybody to get together, have fun, and do this. And it didn't matter, you know, if you were white, didn't matter if you were black, didn't matter if you were
Matter if you were rich or poor.
Didn't matter. It was the one, you know, this music was the one common denominator that everybody got to expound on. And you know, you've seen it. You've seen how industry is, you've seen how people are for the longest period of times, and there's been for so long. History repeats itself. Remember this.
Yep.
History repeats itself. Yep. You've just seen it for so long where everybody's been in such that dark place and everybody's been like for themselves and everybody's been very, very separated. And now everybody is starting to do this whole, okay, you know, they want to stretch their legs and they want to, you know,
do
this collaborating thing. And what's so funny is that some of these kids and stuff now, they think that this is a new thing. And that's why I'm talking to you. It's like, no, look, dude.
Right.
See,
no,
We've been doing this. And so in comes in, since we're talking about, you know, Jen Kelly and Fragile Mortals, that was, you know, the song, look, Fired Up, that's a stadium feel good rock. Some football team better be coming in because they're going to go stomp, they're going to stomp some competition. Awesome.
Yep.
We haven't had one of those in a very long time, you know.
I know.
We haven't had that.
The whole Fragile Mortals idea came about like this. I was working on the album. I had already recorded the songs with, I got a song with Mick Mars from Motley Crue, Sebastian Box, and Travis Barker. Who else did I got? I got the Tim Armstrong show. I got a song with Joan Jett.
Mm-hmm. I saw that list. You know what you're doing. I know what you're doing, man. You're going and you're. I'm not dumb. Look, my name is D too. You're going to each of those very, very. You know, you're friends with them. You meet up with them, but those people had impacted you. Like that was
kid. Like this is unbelievable.
You're chasing your idol song. You're chasing like, dude.
Exactly.
I remember listening to this, and I remember thinking, hey, we're friends. Hey, I like blue too.
Yeah, now
blue too, and
to work together. So I had met Rob Dukes, was still singing with Exodus.
Ah, okay.
And I went to do a surprise performance with Pop Evil.
Okay.
At a Rock on the Range, and you know, when I was backstage, I was backstage at Rock on the Range, and yo, every group, I'm talking about, these are some of the biggest groups in rock and in metal everywhere.
Yeah,
they telling me how cool I am.
Yes.
Oh, you going on this and that? Oh, you here performing? I'm like, no, I'm doing a special thing with Pop Evil, because I did a guest appearance on a remix of one of the Pop Evil songs. So that being said, I was backstage and Dukes walks up on me.
And
he was like, hey, dude, yo, man, I love you. You're a cool dude. This and that. I want to give you a CD of my new band.
Okay.
And I'm always open to listening to new music. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
because, you know, these bands, they make great songs and great sounds, so I always get good ideas. So right. I was like, cool, I'll be right here. But, you know, things happen. I had to go do an interview. He had to go eat. Then he had to go on stage, whatever. So we missed each other.
I got you.
But then the next morning, I was getting on the first flight out. When I'm going through the airport, who did I see? I see Rob Duke.
Okay.
He was like, yo, this is crazy. Yo, this is meant to be. Whatever, whatever. Yo, I want to give you that CD that I wanted to give to you. And I'm like, cool. So he hands me the CD, and I jokingly say, yo, if I like something on here, we're going to record together.
Okay.
And Dukes is funny. Dukes goes, okay, I'm going to hold you to that. So make a long story short, I take the CD home, and I fall in love with their record on that album, Carney Love. They got a song in their last album called Carney Love.
Okay.
And I was like, yo, I call him back. Yo, this is great. This is crazy. Yo, we got to do something, whatever, whatever. And he's like, cool. So when we went in the studio, Rob Machete,
yes,
came up with the idea to take the Fired Up Sports chant and make a record. He said, you need to make a record that has that it's tricky to rock a rhyme.
I knew it. I was waiting for this.
Fired up, you fired up. I said, done. He sent me the demo, the track. I wrote my rhyme. So we went in the studio and we made Fired Up.
Love it.
And that session went so good. It was like we grew up together. We said, yo, let's keep going.
And that's
so
what
then we
doing.
Made this other record called Lot Lizard.
And yes.
It was like, yo, let's keep going. And then they came to Jersey to perform at this little live rock venue called Dingbat.
Mm-hmm.
And Dukes invited his friend Bumblefoot.
Yes.
And Bumblefoot is one of the greatest guitar players ever in the history of rock and roll. He had just got finished playing with Guns N' Roses with Axl in them.
He did.
And Bumble heard the two records and said, yo, I gotta be down with you. And this is a beautiful thing. See, it's like kids things. It's like, can I play too?
Yo, I wanna be there. Right.
So Bumble goes, yo, I gotta be down with this. I wanna produce and I wanna play on some of these songs. So we went out to Bumblefoot's house in a matter, I would say, in 2 weeks.
Wow.
We had 7 records done.
Oh wow.
And the good thing about this album that we did, it was dealing with all of the demons and struggles that everybody was going through personally.
Nice.
Rob Machete had 2 brothers die of cancer.
Yep.
In a matter of 3 months while we was recording this record.
Isn't that crazy?
Dukes told me he was suicidal.
Yes.
You know, because now my book is coming out. He didn't know. I didn't tell him. He's like, do you too? He tells me the story about him swimming and almost drowning and saying, I'm going to swim till I can't. I'm a swim till I can't swim no more, and I hope
right.
I die in the ocean.
Right.
He swims miles and miles out and realizes he's a good swimmer. So he says, okay.
And he makes
I'm going to turn around. He says, I'm going to turn around, and I'm going to swim back to shore. If I make it back to shore, I'm going to go to get sober. He made it back to shore and never got high again.
There it is.
So on this Fragile Mortal album, we was dealing with death. We was dealing with suicide. We was dealing with depression. We was dealing with substance abuse. And then, you know, we got all this stuff going on in America with the black and white relationships, the cops getting shot, the crazy ass president just cussing out Muslims,
right,
and people like that. So we Dukes wanted to do a record called Under the Skin.
Okay.
Talking about, yo, under the skin, man, I don't care if you're white, black, Puerto Rican, Chinese, we all the same under there.
Yep.
So all of these real life issues came in as the catalyst to drive us to keep recording. Because every time we would come up with a subject, everybody actually had something that was really happening that we could apply on those records. And it was like bringing those emotions, thoughts, and feelings to life so that we could put it in a song, so that we could reach out and touch, not just touch someone, we want to touch everybody.
Yes.
And that's how the album really came together.
See, that is fantastic. And I am so,
I got 3 of their records on my album. And we had this song, which Generation Kill is the band playing all the music.
Nice.
And it's me and Rob Dukes, along with Billy Joe Armstrong from Green Day.
Isn't that crazy?
And we did a tribute to Freddie Mercury. We did We Will Rock You Over.
Nice.
And it's just amazing what's going on right
now. You have done so much. You're doing so much. And, you know, I love... I absolutely, D, I love the fact that you went back and you found the right answer. I love the fact that for you and for your own sake that you found the right answer, because you have to understand just how impactful and how inspirational that you have been to so many people. And it doesn't matter if they were rock, pop, hip hop, blues, or whatever.
At all. I know. I mean, I got people that say, DMC, I'm not adopted. DMC, I don't like hip hop, or DMC, I don't like metal. But he says, just for you saying. And that's the thing where I mean that if you remove guilt and shame, you remove the pain. Just by us speaking up about what we're going through, you know what I'm saying? You could be the everyday, you could be the cook at McDonald's.
Right.
And you could be going through something, but you hold it in because you think they're going to think I'm weird, they're going to think that I'm crazy, or you're going to think nobody's going to understand. 99 times out of 100, I could even say 100% of the time, when you reveal something that you're going through, no matter what you're going through, these two things always happen. These two things. When they reveal I'm adopted, I'm alcoholic, you know, I'm having marriage problems, I'm having problems with my kids at school, whatever it is, 100% of the time, two of these things happen. Somebody will go, me too. Or somebody will say, I have a daughter, or I have a brother, or I have a wife that's going through that. Because what had happened with me that led up to the book, and me not being ashamed to really pour these emotions out on my records is, after Jam Master Jay got shot and killed, remember my partner Run, he had 10 seasons of a successful reality show.
Yes.
And I'm alive. You know, people would say to D, we knew Jay got shot and killed, but we thought you was dead too, because nobody never seen me. Mm. Everybody said, the main question I was getting was, why you ain't on Run's house? And I'm not on Run's house because we got a beef and we don't like each other, nothing like that. After Jay died, life happened.
It did.
You know what I'm saying? So he's on TV, but while he's on TV, I'm going through rehab, I'm going through therapy, I'm dealing with the things that I'm dealing. So I kind of got like fed up of people asking me why I'm not on Run's house. And I would go, well, I just got out of rehab. And the people would go, come again? I said, I just got out of rehab, or I'm in therapy, or I would go, I just found out that I'm adopted and I'm fucking thinking the world is going to end, whatever. And people would say, really, D? What's that about? And I would explain to, I'm talking about people from all walks of life. Like, the first thing that happened when I said, I was 35 years old when I found out that I was adopted. And everybody always laughed and say, over the phone? Like that? It's the funniest thing. I would go, yeah, but immediately I had these people at a school tell me, DMC, can you come talk to our 7-year-old daughter? Because we just revealed to her that she was adopted and she's going through things. Or when I said, yeah, I just got out of rehab, people would, I had the fireman, the police officer and the fireman say, yo, DMC, can you come to the firehouse or the precinct and talk to the police officers? And I jokingly said, why? Who's adopted? They said, no, nobody's adopted. But all the cops and all the firemen are stressed out and they're starting to drink and abuse substance. So if you come and speak to us, so I realized that, that's why I said, if you don't reveal how you feel, whether good or bad, you will never heal. So my healing came through sharing my experience with other people who, without them speaking up, just because I spoke up, now they don't feel alone.
That's
it. But if I would have never been ashamed, I just got out of rehab and it was the best thing ever. And I'm going to therapy. And most men, you know, most men think going to therapy is a weak thing and it's a sucker thing. But if DMC, the mighty king of rock, went and got sober, if DMC, the mighty king of rock, is going to therapy, it must not be a weak thing to do. And that's what I, you know, that's what my truth. So now I'm realizing, okay, I did that. On my next song, the same way I talked about, it's Chris, like, I joke with kids. Kids go, you're old school. And I'll say, young man, young lady, I made a record about Christmas. Me and my boys made a record about Christmas that will be more gangster than anybody from any era of hip-hop forever. And then the kids go, yeah, that's right, that's true, yeah. And they did a record about their sneakers. So think about that. I rhymed about sneakers, I rhymed about Christmas. In the same way I rhymed about, you know, I love eating chicken and collard greens and I go to St. John's University, I shouldn't be ashamed to let people know I was in a dark place one day like you, but here's what I did. By me doing that, I may not have their solution, but I show them that there is hope.
Yes.
Because, look, I was where Chester was. I was where Chris Cornell was. I was where my man, Nirvana is one of my favorite groups. I was where all of those dudes were.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Robin Williams, all of them.
And you understand.
But the thing, right, I know exactly what they were feeling. But all I can do so that others don't take that jump is reveal what I did.
Yes.
You know, my solution may not be theirs, but it may be because what led me to my solution was going to rehab.
Yes.
And in rehab, I found therapy. Therapy allows me to live. So if I could lead somebody to rehab or somebody to therapy, and somebody hit me with this the other day. Yo, DMC, man, you got a good job. You can afford therapy.
Right.
What do you do if you don't have the resources? And I was totally blown away. But then I remembered what was happening with my situation. I always tell, like, a lot of kids in school right now going through bullying and peer pressure.
Right.
I mean, you know, the internet was a blessing and a curse.
Yes, it is.
And it's really a curse for a lot of these little kids because what happens during lunchtime, before and after school now follows them home.
Yeah.
It was different in our period. We could get away from the bullies and the guy, you know, the girl or the dude you didn't want to see. You didn't have to see him when you went home at night.
Nope, you didn't.
Now they following you around on social media and all of that.
Right.
But I always tell the little kids, because little kids are no different from grown-ups. They're ashamed. They don't want to be teased and considered weirdos. And they're embarrassed sometimes to go speak to their parents. They're embarrassed sometimes to speak to their other friends, or they're embarrassed to sometimes even speak to their own brothers and sisters. So I always tell a little kid and grown-ups too, there's always somebody in your life that even at your saddest point, at the worst point of your life, when you think about that person or when you see that person, you may not do it on your face, but your spirit smiles. So I tell little kids, okay, maybe you don't want to tell your parents right now or your brother because your brother might go beat the bully up or whatever. I say, go to the librarian. Maybe there's a nursing school that you like. And you go over to, excuse me, Miss McGillicuddy, there's something I need to tell you. Share it. Get it out of you.
Yes.
Because 9 times out of 10, Miss McGillicuddy will go, oh, my God, Cheryl or Johnny, me too. So I tell kids, share what you're feeling, because then you will realize you're not the only person on the face of the earth going through something. See, that's the whole thing that leads you to commit suicide.
Yes.
You think nobody else understands what you're going through, but that's not true. If you're in a room with three people, one of those people in that room is going through something maybe similar or completely different, but they're going through something like you. So I'm realizing now, I had a guy say, yo, DMC, man, just for you saying that school was cool, I had dropped out of high school, but I went and got a GED.
So right.
I just said, I got a diploma like DMC. That's powerful.
It is powerful.
And it blew me away. He said, now I got my Gazelles, I got my big gold chain, I got my Adidas with no laces in it, I got my Walk This Way playing on my boombox, and I got a general equivalency diploma, because DMC said, it's cool to be from the streets or be from where I am and have one of those things. It's not sore. So I realized even, I can tell you all the good, nice things I go through.
Well, sure.
But I realized me telling the truth about what I'm going through, even though it's bad or traumatic or unfortunate, it can have the same good effect.
And it can. And it has. And you've done so much. You've done so much. And, it, you know, there's a lot of things that you were talking about, you know, today, D, that, you know, even I needed to hear on some instances. And so sometimes I think that this phone call was supposed to happen anyway. And
oh, yes, it did, because I'm never home on Saturday.
I know. And I'm
it's
so glad,
crazy.
You know, that when we were sitting there and we were trying to figure out, you know, times, you know, between, you know, what was going to, you know, going to happen. And I mean, look, there was somebody else that I was going to get to talk to today. And it turned out that they're, you know, that person's on tour. And, you know, he winded up having to go to, you know, to another date and stuff. And so it was like,
right.
Literally the day that stuff was sent to me literally was the day that it opened up. And I was like, well, okay, that's meant to be.
That's awesome. Wow, that's perfect. Yeah. And you know, and the funny thing is though, I went back and I, you know, published a comic book, because
you did.
People don't realize that comic books is my first love. Comic books, especially No, not just the kids, to all you grown-ups out there. I'm 53 years old. You can still pursue your dream.
Yes.
The thing that you loved as a little kid that you gave up to do your job and pursue your career and get your kids through high school or, you know, the things that you did to sacrifice who you were to please your parents. Let me go get this degree and do all of that. Everything that you originally loved when you were just an open, sweet spirit on the face of the earth, you can still do whether you're 50, 60, or 70. Always remember that. So after I realized that I don't like Jack Daniels and Jim Beam because they really ain't my friend. At the end of the day, who do I have? And I always remember I had the creativity of comic books. So I started the comic book because one of my editors who convinced me to do the comic book, he said this to me. At first, I didn't want to do the comic book because I said, he said, why not? Why you don't want to do the comic book? You love comic books. You're official. You're a geek. You're a nerd. You know, you're not doing it just to make money. I said, I know. But I just, I said, I don't want to be another rapper just because I got a hit record thinking I could do everything, because rappers and hip hop have a way of messing things up that they get involved with. And he said, yo, D, that's very honorable. But he said, with this book, you can do everything that you've been doing with your music. And I was like, what are you talking about? He said, inspire, motivate, educate, and entertain people. And I was like, wow, I didn't think of about like this. So he asked me, yo, you can't be Marvel, you can't be DC, you can't be Image. He said, if you had to think of a name for your comic book company, what would it be? And this is why I'm saying it's always important that you be you. The DMC is the initials of my name, but it also means Devastated Mind Controller or Doing Minds Cool.
No.
So he asked me that. I said, I'm going to just call my company what I'll be doing. Darryl Makes Comics. So 3 years ago, we started the comic imprint because me and my two editor friends, we're those kids that was collecting comics when we was little.
Yep. And the beautiful thing to come full circle, you know, from when you were a little kid, is that you told everybody in the beginning of this interview that, you know, Marvel, you know, was your world because, you know, it dealt with, you know, the streets of New York, and you were able to.
Yeah, it was real for me.
You were able to. Yes. And what's beautiful about.
Think about it. I live in Queens. Why do you think I always, I'm DMC from Hollis, Queens. I'm light skinned. I live in Queens. I'm the king from Queens. Here's what's a mind blowing thing to me. Oh my God. I grew up in Queens. Spider-Man lives in Queens.
Yes.
Spider-Man lives in Queens.
And you're like, you relate. And what's even beautiful is you come around, and so Darryl Makes Comics comes into fruition. And the beautiful thing is that some of the last stuff that I was reading when I was doing some research on you is that it gets picked up under some stuff under Marvel.
Yeah. Marvel is like, Marvel is so cool with us. We actually wrote a book for Marvel.
Yes.
Last year, we did a issue for Guardians of Infinity. All you comic book lovers out there, Marvel was like, they love what we doing because we always tell them where it comes from. I gotta give props where it's due, and you know, they support us and stuff like that because they know it's real. They let me and my team, Darryl Makes Comics, we did an issue of Guardians of Infinity where we had Groot from Guardians of the Galaxy team up with Ben Grimm, the Thing from the Fantastic Four.
Isn't that crazy?
They go on a space mission and they crash land in the Lower East Side of New York. So you see that just by us being honest about, you know, who we like and who influenced us.
Yep.
And never in a thousand years, you know what I'm saying, would I think that after being able to record Walk This Way with Aerosmith and Steven Tyler and Joe Perry.
Right.
After being able to collab with Joan Jett and Tim Armstrong, how in a million years would I ever think that the kid who grew up reading the book would actually get a chance to write for the company that was touching my lives all those years?
So you've come full circle, my friend. Congratulations.
Well, right, it's blowing my mind. At first, we didn't want to do it because we were like, nope, we don't want to mess up. You know what I'm saying? We don't want nobody saying, oh, man, why they let DMC write for Marvel? It sucks. But it worked because they influenced me. I was already part of that family.
Yes. I want to thank you so much. I could talk to you for the entire show because you've got way too much. And you know, honey, you have to promise me that this is not the last time that we get to catch up.
No, I promise. You know what I'll do? I'll come back on in November.
Okay.
I'll come back on in November for Record Store Day.
Okay.
I'm dropping vinyl.
What?
Yeah, on Record Store Day, I'm dropping vinyl. And we'll talk about it.
Yes.
The cover art is done by one of the most critically acclaimed comic book artists in history. Matter of fact, they got one of the biggest shows on TV right now. But I'm dropping a 4-song EP to plant the appetizer for the album that's coming next year.
Okay.
But the 4-song EP is this. It's a song called Flame, produced by John Moya from the rock band Disturbed.
Yes.
Featuring DMC and Miles Kennedy.
Oh my gosh.
The other song, the next song, is a song called Coming Like a Rhino, featuring DMC and Chuck D of Public Enemy. And the backing band is a band out of Montreal, Canada. I know a lot of you rockheads will know, called Slaves on Dope.
Wow.
I got a song called Back from the Dead, which is me and my new band. Big shout out to my drummer, Veronica Bellino. She's not just a good female drummer, she is a badass drummer, better than all you dudes. And the fourth song is a song called High and Low, featuring DMC and Rome of Sublime.
You are killing me.
On Record Store Day in November, I'll come back on and we'll talk about that.
All right, you know what? That's it. It's a date. It's done. We're tied at the hip because D talks to D. We're D squared, and you know,
D squared
has got to have moments together while you're going through this journey now. And
so in November, I'll come back on. It'll be D quadruple.
That's D cube.
We're talking again.
That D cube, baby. You gotta remember D cube.
Yep, exactly.
Well, listen, sweetie, I'm going to let you enjoy the one weekend that you have to yourself, you know, so you can have some time with your family. Thank you for being who you are.
No doubt.
Thank you for everything you've done. Thank you for what you've done for your industry. And thank you for not ever having any idea that you made that much of an impact, because that just kept...
I have no idea. No, I'm totally blown. I did? Wow.
And look, I've seen your pictures. You're one of the sexiest geeks I've seen in a long time.
Thank you. What's my rhyme? I hit the beats hard and I speak hard, but get the Greek god because I'm a geek god.
There it is. Bam. You go enjoy your afternoon, sweetie. You and I, we're going to catch up real soon, okay?
Yes. Thank you, Dee. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Big shout out to Memphis. Big shout out to everybody around there listening in. And like I said, this is DMC and the place to be. And everybody that's right here, the place to be is right here with me and Dee.
Oh, you rock. Thank you for my very own first rhyme from you. It's precious. Listen,
thank
babe,
you, Dee.
No problem, honey. We'll talk soon.
Very soon.
All righty. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Alrighty, guys, you heard it right there. Yes, that was an extra special, extra extended, extra long commercial break that I'm going to have to explain to my program director. But I was not going to miss any of that. Mr. Daryl DMC McDaniels, DMC of Run DMC, you guys heard it here, his world, his story. And the biggest takeaways and the biggest lessons, you know, is to remember you, be you, do you, and make sure that you are your own superpower. I have learned so much from him. And we are so thrilled to have been able to talk to him right here on Radio Memphis and Radio Memphis around the world. And, you know, we spent a lot of time, you know, talking about, you know, some of the, you know, the trials and tribulations. And, you know, and yes, you need to go look up some of the stuff that he's done. You need to go look up some of the books, you know, that he's gotten into as far as, you know, as far as writing and things like that. 10 Ways, to Not Commit Suicide, you know, was a very impactful thing. And this is him pretty much pouring out his heart. And you heard he's talking about the collaborations that he's doing with The Planet, which is fantastic. One specifically is another song, you know, with Jen Kill, Fragile Mortals. I have a song, and it was because he talked about those times when they were getting together and writing, and everybody was going through those moments, or everybody was going through some episodes. He has a song that's called Suicide. I've got it for you right here on Radio Memphis right now, and I'm going to play it for you, all right? So let's go ahead and do this from Fragile Mortals. Big, huge thank you again to DMC.
The proceeding was produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated and originally aired live on Radio Memphis. Any offers or advertisement contained may not still be valid. All rights are reserved and copyright is held by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated, Memphis, Tennessee. For more, look for all the RMOD players at radio-memphis.com.